Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all-time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/Tim Pool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or give them a call at 877-646-5347. Again, that number is 877-646-5347. Make sure to head over to timcast.com, click join us, and become a member to support our work directly, because this show is made possible thanks in part to viewers like you. If you like the work we do, become a member, and you'll also get access to uncensored, members-only shows from Timcast IRL, Monday through Thursday at 10 p.m. You can also join our Discord server and talk with like-minded individuals. Now, let's get into that first story. With the National Guard being deployed into New York subways, I couldn't help but feel that this is in preparation for something else. Like, things are going to get really bad in this country long before they get better. And I think politics will result in chaos. I think that Democrat leaders and politicians are actively trying to burn down the country. And it may seem hyperbolic, but I literally think you've got these multicultural democracy individuals. They do not like the Constitutional Republic. They refer to this country as white supremacist. When Democrats and progressives say white supremacy, they mean constitutional republicanism and classical liberalism. I'm not exaggerating or being cute. That's what they're referring to. But most people know white supremacy to mean the belief that the white, you know, white people are inherently superior or something like that. So when you go to the average American, you say white supremacy, that's what they think. But the left believes that our republicanist form of government, and I don't mean Republican Party, I mean that there are states that are represented to a larger federal government. They believe that is white supremacy. They want to break it all down. They want to open up the borders. They want to fundamentally change the nature and culture of this country. They are destroying it. The purpose of the National Guard is to keep you in line because they'll follow orders, even if it means something illegal. Well, my friends, it is beginning. This is not the first story, it won't be the last, but it's certainly a story. End wokeness tweets. Pittsburgh police will no longer respond to certain calls and will instead be directing people to a telephone unit. Those crimes include thefts, harassment, criminal mischief, burglary, alarms, etc. Additionally, there will be only 20 police officers patrolling the entire city from 3 a.m. to 7 a.m. It comes amidst staffing shortages. Let me play the video for you that they posted.
What was the big takeaway today?
Yeah, Susan, residents of the city will see a major change in the way police respond. They will no longer respond to calls that aren't considered in-progress emergency. That means calls like criminal mischief, theft, harassment, and most burglary alarms will all be handled by an enhanced telephone reporting unit. That means residents will file a police report over the phone. Officers will not respond unless it's an emergency. Also, between the hours of 3 a.m. and 7 a.m., there will be no officers at any of the six stations throughout the city. Call boxes that link directly to 911 have been installed for people to use in case of an emergency. And during the overnight shift, there will be as few as 20 officers to cover the entire city. The chief said today the data supports that.
Yes, it's enough to cover the entire city in those hours when we have 8% of the time people are calling. I'm confident in the decisions that we make that it impacts this bureau and the city in a much better way than we have in the past.
Now, the chief also acknowledging today that some of these changes are due to staffing shortages. He's down to 740 officers, well below the 850 they would like to have. Now, coming up new at 5, residents, city council, and the police union all weighing in on these big changes that begin Monday.
I'll tell you what's coming. at least from this, vigilantism. We're legit going to start seeing some Punisher-level stuff. I'm not exaggerating, and it worries me. There's a viral video I showed last week where some guys were in a Home Depot parking lot. A guy was walking out of the store with a bunch of power tools, and they shoved him, knocked him to the ground, and beat the crap out of him. And they were saying things like, because of you, we have to pay more money. And it's true. When you steal, that loss gets incorporated into the costs of the other goods in the store and services. People have had enough. I'll tell you where I think this goes. No cops in the wee hours of the morning? That's when you're going to get a lot of property crime. Of course, during the day is obviously when you get most crime because of the people are awake. But what does this ultimately lead to? What happens if you defend yourself? The police don't show up, so you pull out your gun. You're in PA, you're legally allowed to have one. And you shoot and kill the man wielding the knife trying to rob you. I'll tell you. If the man got caught for robbery by the cops, they'd let him go in 2 seconds. They'd say, you know, well, you know, what are you going to do about it? If you shoot this man defending yourself and he dies, the family will hunt you down. You will get Black Lives Matter protests. You'll be George Zimmerman. The police will come and arrest you. And if you're lucky, you'll get acquitted. And when you get acquitted, the rioters will still threaten your home, threaten your family, your children. So I'll tell you what I see happening. Sooner or later, someone's going to be out in the street with a mask on. And they're going to be armed. And people are going to start doing their own masked patrols. In New York City, Gavin McInnes was giving a speech to, I think it was like Republican Club of some sort. And a bunch of Proud Boys were there. Far leftists descended on the area surrounding it and several blocks, threatening people, screaming at them, throwing things at people. When many of the Proud Boys began to leave, they would walk down the street and there's Antifa throwing stuff at them. So what happens? Eventually, the Proud Boys just say, okay, screw it. They want to go. Let's go. The Proud Boys run full speed at the far left. I believe one of the Antifa guys threw a bottle and then they run at him, get into a fight. And it's like mutual combat. The police are called. The police arrive. The police ask the far leftists to give a statement, and the far leftists refuse to give any identification, their name, and they flee. The Proud Boys, being good, upstanding conservatives, back the blue, baby, said, officer, here's my name and address. Thank you so much. And the cop went, you're under arrest. And they went, what, me? But we were the victims. And the cop said, I don't care. Those Proud Boys got years in prison. They may be out by now, I'm pretty sure. Would be interesting to talk to them, actually. We should look into that. They got years in prison. The Antifa guys? Cops didn't even know who they were. They got away with it. Yeah, they said, well, we'd have charged them if we knew who they were. Because it's gang violence. You see? So here's what I see happening. In a place like Pittsburgh, if you want to defend yourself and they find out who you are, expect Black Lives Matter to burn your home down. Expect the police to lock you in jail. Man, this is very much like how a comic book would start. The city was rampant with lawlessness. Activists would target anyone who dared defend themselves, but criminals ran free because the police were politically lacked the power to do anything about it. So people began to put on the masks. Because then, well, they can't stop the criminals. And they can't stop those wearing masks. They don't know who they are. Vigilantism, dude. Watchmen is an interesting comic. I recommend you you read it. Graphic novel. Or the movie, but the graphic novel is way more detailed and way better. In that one, it's basically the gangs were wearing masks. And when the cops would try to do anything to them, the gangs would retaliate. So the cops started wearing masks, which is not allowed. And so eventually you end up with vigilantes, heroes who would wear masks to protect themselves from law enforcement and from, you know, from criminal gangs. But law enforcement mostly was into it for a while. But then eventually they passed a bill, like this is the graphic novel, that you can't wear masks anymore. Vigilantes are outlawed. And in the movie, in the graphic novel, Rorschach, he doesn't have any powers. He's just a guy who is strong, can fight, and wears a mask. The cops hunt him down. They put him in prison for being a vigilante, but they know that he's stopping bad guys. Granted, he kills people. He's a brutal, brutal, nasty guy. A lot of people like him. He's a moral absolutist, though. But I see us going in this direction. I'm reminded of the V for Vendetta scene where the inspector is saying eventually someone will do something stupid. It's a really interesting scene. It shows one of these authoritarian cops seeing a little girl running wearing the Guy Fawkes mask. So he shoots her in the back, kills her. And then people come up around this cop and he's holding up his badge. And then they just scene cuts. But they probably beat him to death. Here's what I see happening. There's reports coming out of Haiti. I don't know if these are true. That if you're a cop and these gangs catch you, they will beat you in public while you scream and cry. Because you're on the other side. I would not be surprised if we see something similar here, whether you're a cop or otherwise. The police officers that are willing to arrest, you know, people for minor infractions parading at the Capitol or something like this on January 6th, but they allow murderers to go free. If a guy robs a liquor store, the left and the government protects. I mean, look at this. Joe Biden apologized for calling a murderer illegal. That's where we're at. But if you're Daniel Penny or Daniel Perry, yeah, there's two of them. One guy in Austin, far leftist, approached him with a rifle and raised it to his car and he shot him and went to jail. And then you have the guy in New York where there was a deranged man in the subway threatening to kill people, and people have been killed in the subway. And so I think this one was Penny, puts him in a headlock, and now he's in jail. They'll come after you. There's only one thing you can do. If you are on that train, and I don't recommend, I'm not going to give legal advice to anybody. I don't recommend you do anything. I'm saying if Penny, as this man's screaming, I'll do this, I'll do that, pulled off his suit revealing a Superman costume and pulled on a mask, there'd be a video of the subway superhero who saved people from a deranged man threatening to kill others. The left would scream, no, he didn't have to kill him. The witnesses said their lives were saved. And everyone would say, who is the masked vigilante who stopped these people? Nobody knows. And Penny would not be in jail. Or not be going to jail. I think he's out on bond. But they're going to lock him up. They'll get him for something. With Pittsburgh doing this with police, this is where I feel like we're going. People are going to start putting on masks. And they're going to go out with baseball bats. And they're going to just beat the ever-living crap out of criminals. But guess what? It won't matter. There's no cops in Pittsburgh to even arrest the vigilantes. There'll be a news report that says a man beaten with baseball bat, shocking story. And you'll get the details. You'll see a video of it. And it'll be a guy wearing all black and a ski mask beating a burglar. A guy robbing a liquor store gets cracked in the head because they're going to be like, there's no cops anymore. And then what? I don't know. This year is going to get absolutely wild. There's this really fun conspiracy theory. It's hilarious. People online, on Twitter, the conspiracy theory is that there is a device that can see into the future and it stops at 2024. Uh-huh. I will say this. You know, I feel fairly confident in being able to predict and see things. Not that I get everything right or could see everything. But for instance, I'll give you an example. Like in 2020, the left likes to play these videos of me saying 49 state landslide. It's mostly a meme referencing Ronald Reagan. But what I was actually saying is that, like, Moody's Analytics, for instance, said the economy was so good, Trump could expect to see there was a slim potential of a landslide victory, but likely he could get a couple points above 50% and win the popular vote. And so my view is that Trump was walking towards victory, and we may have the same problem we have today. I wasn't wrong. What I was assessing was good data analytics and a good economy and a lot of factors that historically would say a president would win. We all saw that. What we missed, the shadow campaign to save the election. That's what they called it in Time magazine. I couldn't have known about that. What I mean to say is when I'm like, wow, look at all these indicators of Trump winning. Seems like he'll win. Trump didn't win. And the only assumption we could make off the data was that Trump was likely going to win. And in fact, Trump got more votes than any sitting president. And he's the first president to get more votes, but lose. He's the first president in the past 60 years to lose the bellwether states. So it's like the bellwether counties, like he won all these metrics, still didn't get there because we didn't expect what Time magazine referred to as the shadow campaign, universal mail-in voting, lawsuits, things like that. Ballot harvesting. Yeah. Call it whatever you want. Now, my point there is I could still see all of this stuff with these data points and be like, here's what I think might happen and go, oh, you know what? I missed these things. I can't predict anything for 2024. I'm surprised Joe Biden's even still in the race. I can't see anything. I don't know what happens. Maybe it like December 31st, 2024, we'll all be sitting there being like, I can't believe what just happened this year. And then all of a sudden there's a flash. We're in a big, vast, open white space standing there by ourselves like, what? Everything's gone. Your chairs are gone. Your house is gone. It's just you're in nothingness. And then you just see a big thing saying, game over. Now what? And then you go back from where you came from. The place you were before you were born or whatever. I have no idea. We'll see, man. Or maybe that's when it all begins. Maybe that's the real end game. We'll see. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 1 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then. Did you know that a study was done that found that only around 26% of people have what's described as an inner monologue? This is a story that's been making the rounds quite a bit, and I'd like to weigh in on this because I find it very fascinating. Bustle, as well as many other outlets, have written stories about what it's like to not have an internal monologue. Let me start from the beginning. A lot of people are going around saying NPCs are real. If you're not familiar with the concept of an NPC, I will tell you it's a non-player character. When you play a video game, let's say Mario Brothers, the original Mario, because most people can understand what Mario is. You've seen it. You're a little Italian plumber, and you control him. You can make him jump, and you can make him punch bricks. I always thought that was really funny that Mario punches bricks, but he does. When he jumps, his fist is above his head, and he bashes the bricks, and, you know, mushrooms come out. What an odd game. The story is actually pretty crazy. Apparently, the bricks are block. They were people that were turned into bricks. I'm not kidding. He's bashing them open to collect items that could help him on his journey. Anyway, when you're playing Mario, you know that Mario, he's a player character. You are the force behind Mario. You press right, he goes right. You press left, he goes left. You press A, he jumps. You hold B, he runs. But you know that the turtle guys, the Koopas, there's no one playing them. But they move left and right too. Some of them even jump. Those are non-player characters. They are characters in the game you can interact with, but they're not players, and there's nothing behind them but program. That's what many people say about those with no internal monologue. And now the argument is, let me pull up the tweet from Raw Egg Nationalist. He tweeted, if you ever struggle to understand why things are the way they are and why life is so terribly frustrating, remember that 50% of the population don't even have an inner monologue and they get to vote too. Well, I showed a study that I have the story from IFL Science. People with no internal monologue explain what it's like in their head. And in this excerpt, it says subjects experienced themselves as inwardly talking to themselves in 26% of all samples. But there were large individual differences. Some subjects never experienced inner speech. In as many as 75% of samples, the median percentage across subjects was 20%. Now, the numbers varied. Some say 30, some say 20, some say 50. But the point is this. You'll notice in many of these stories about internal monologue, they are all framed as though it is shocking to not have one. What does that mean? If the reality is half of all people do not think inwardly in words to themselves, and even as high as 74% do not, why would the media frame things as though it is shocking to discover? Certainly half to the majority of people, they would be writing stories titled, "Here's what it's like to think in words in your mind." Because if you were in the minority position, you'd imagine that the news outlets would be shocked to find that there are a certain subset of people that actually think in language and words in their own mind. But this presents an interesting circumstance, an interesting reality. The people who are writing articles, who are in control of media, tend to have an inner monologue. I don't know what that means, but it means that the bias is in favor of the minority. Now, if it's 50-50, then it's not so much, but the bias is still in favor of those with an inner monologue are likely to be in positions of narrative, be it Timcast or be it Bustle or any other news outlet, because the narrative is always framed as though it's shocking that some people don't have an internal monologue. You understand what I'm saying? What this says to me is people with an internal monologue are more likely to wield influence, and that's a fact based on these stories. It also says to me that maybe the NPC thing is real. But I do have a simpler explanation for it that I think is less biased. You see, the people who think to themselves with their inner monologue, which is probably many of you, including myself, tend to view themselves as superior. Why? Anyone who does not is an NPC. Yeah, I don't buy that. I think it's actually a bit more simple than that. There are varying degrees of cognitive function, and some people think in images. Some people think in amorphous, abstract ways that don't require words. And one could actually argue that if you do not have an inner monologue, you can react more quickly. While others actually have written stories saying they react much more slowly as their brain struggles to process information, they don't communicate to themselves. I want to read this a little bit for you to give you a general idea of what is being explained. But I do believe this is fascinating. And I'll give you my breakdown, but let me give you some context. Bustle writes, take a second to sit in silence. Is there chatter inside your head, or is it relatively quiet in there? There's a conversation making its way around TikTok about this inner voice, or lack thereof. Some people have a chatty internal monologue that narrates their life, while others have a quiet, serene inner landscape. The folks with the internal monologue simply cannot imagine not having one, and vice versa. I will tell you this. There is not a waking moment of my life. There is not high-intensity language blasting through my brain. And if you're wondering why it is that I talk so fast, it's because the narration in my mind is probably at 5 to 10 times verbal communication speed. So I can simplify this very simply. If you've ever heard me do that rapid fire pitch at the end of Timcast IRL, where I talk as quickly as possible and I say, become a member at timcast.com, sign up, join our blah, 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 blah. You get the point. That is slower than I think things. The inner monologue that I have is speaking faster than physical, my mouth can actually iterate. This is easily proven by the fact that I can talk as fast as I can. Or at the very least, I can say this. You know that my brain processes words at least as quickly as I am speaking them. And there are many people who are faster than I am, who talk really, really fast. And it's because language processing is really, really quick. I'm not saying this to say that I'm better or worse than anyone else. It just means that language processes very quickly. I'll get into all this, but let's read some more. They say, as someone with an inner monologue, I fall into the first group. My inner voice mulls over problems, narrates my day, assesses situations as they're happening, pulls up funny memories, and it's been that way forever. That's me, the person who talks out loud. And then there's the other me, that little voice that exists behind my eyeballs. My inner monologue is where I work, walk, go about daily life, and I'm pretty okay with that. It's what I'm used to. In fact, I don't know what else I'd do without her. I think it's weird to refer to yourself in a separate in the third person, but I will also add, I think, therefore I am. This is what's fascinating to me. I think, therefore I am. If someone, I gotta play this clip for you guys. Let me play this clip for you guys. Nope, this is the wrong one. Where we go? Here we go. Here's the clip. Let's play this clip.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay. I know. Let's roll.
People literally have a voice inside of their head. I don't have an inner monologue, and I literally cannot see anything in my mind's eye. If you told me to think of an apple right now and I close my eyes, I literally would quite literally see blackness. When I read a book, the words just somehow, I just comprehend them, but there's no voice. When I'm thinking of a memory, like, I literally can't see it. Just, I don't know how, I just remember it. And I honestly didn't know that anyone could think in a different way until like a year ago. Like, I literally thought the voice in your head thing was like just on TV. And I don't think I've ever met anyone that is in the same boat as me. So if you can relate, please comment below so I don't feel like a freak.
I think therefore I am. Cogito ergo sum. In fact, my friends, as I was watching that video, I was thinking in a multi-track way. This is fascinating to me. If you don't think, if you don't see, if you don't hear, if you don't visualize, if you don't audialize, what's the word for that? We know what visualize means. And it's like there's a word for it. Visualize. It means think of it in your mind. You can see it in your brain. Some people can't visualize, but visualize is a common existing word, meaning many people can do it. Audialize, is that the word? Hear it in your head. I can hear songs in my head. Everybody gets a song stuck in their head.
Here's the fascinating thing to me. I have to just say this with all due respect to that woman. She is an NPC. I think, therefore I am, the justification and the proof for yourself that you exist is that you think to yourself, and if you do, that means you're there. But if you are just incapable of anything going on in there, then that's an NPC. And it's fascinating to me because that literally is the case. Now, non-player character is probably not the right way to phrase it, but this is a non-sentient being. I mean, let me do this. Let me pull up the definition of sentient for you so that we can break this down. Sentient means capable of sensing or feeling, conscious of or responsive to the sensations of seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, smelling. Sentient beings. Sentient being is able to feel things or sense them. Sentient usually occurs in phrases like sentient beings or sentient creatures, making it clear that things don't have life or feelings. So, okay, perhaps I'm being a little bit too harsh. We certainly could argue that they are sentient beings, but they are not conscious entities. And that's the weird thing about all of it. They're not sentient? If you can't think to yourself, either in pictures, words, or sounds, if you are not thinking, this woman says, I literally see blackness. I can't picture an apple. I see nothing, nothing in my mind's eye. There are no words. Then that's quite literally someone who is not a conscious being. Conscious meaning in your mind, you are conscious of what is happening. It's strange. I don't know how to, I have no other understanding of it. It's unfathomable to me. But what ends up happening then is you get people who say, see, these people vote, and they do. So make no mistake, when you see someone who can't think to themselves, they're not going to be able to process complex questions and logic because they can't think to themselves. Certainly, what I said earlier is, you know, people think that if there's no inner monologue, you're not thinking at all. That's not the case. Some people can think in abstract. Some people can think in images or sounds, but not words. And some can do all of it. So there are ways of thinking that are not just I'm talking to myself in my head. Certainly, you can sense and feel and experience these things. So that is not a guarantee that just because someone doesn't have an inner monologue, meaning they're not capable of processing thought. But it does certainly mean that people like that woman is incapable of processing complex problems and solving them. That is to say, if you can't think, see, visualize, or talk to yourself, and someone asks you, you have two apples, you add two more, how many apples do you have? Certainly a person may process the information in some capacity where they know the answer is just four. For me, I actually can see the apples in my mind. I can stack them. I can rotate them. I can spin them. This is a wild thing. I remember when I was younger and we had these IQ tests and I've taken them formally or whatever. And they ask you, they'll give you a picture of an object and ask you to rotate it in your mind or to take a cube and unfold the cube and all of its sides and then place them on it. And this is testing your spatial awareness and your ability to visualize. If you can see, what they'll do is it'll look like a cross and they'll say, fold these panels together to make a cube. And then, you know, and then they'll show the cube and say, which pattern, each tile will have a different symbol. And it'll say, which symbol would appear on this tile? And then you have to answer it. And the goal here is, can you understand? Can you visualize in your mind? There are many people who can't do that. And thus brings us to an interesting conundrum. There are people who are capable of solving complex problems because they can see tremendously in their mind in many different ways. And there are people who can't do that. But the people who can't do that negate the votes of the people who can. And the people who can seem to be fewer and far between. Thus, we live in a world where you will end up with many politicians who believe, and probably many Democrats, that it is their imperative to seize control by force and deception because the people who can't process information outnumber those who can. And those who can't process information will likely just spiral out and die over a long period of time. Thus, you understand why there are people like Adam Schiff. Not that I think the guy's smart. Not that I think he's capable or thinking. I think he's evil. But there are many people like him who think to themselves, because I can process information and these people can't, I will just manipulate and seize power. It's a weird world to live in, I gotta be honest. Now, what I will add, going back to the argument, well, I don't think it's fair to say that all people with no inner monologue are NPCs. I'll put it this way. As I mentioned earlier, some people can visualize information. Some people may not think the words, but they can certainly in their mind see block, block, plus block, block equals block, 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 right? Like, you can visualize images. You can think in words. You can hear sounds. What I think this is may have a lot to do with brain development as a child. Were you exposed to things that built the neural pathways? And there are degrees of consciousness. I was reading the scientific study that said, it is not that animals are simply not conscious. It's that there are varying degrees of consciousness. And it makes me fascinated by what would be beyond human. We view ourselves as the epitome, the apex of conscious thought. We are reasoning beings. We can build and control and manipulate our environments and do wonders, even go to outer space. What's next? We certainly are not the end-all be-all of consciousness. That would be absurd. There is certainly something greater and beyond us, which is a contributing factor to my belief in God. But, you know, we're limited by what we think what we know and what we can perceive. What I think is that, as I stated, there are varying degrees of capability of processing thought. This woman I showed you in this video, zero. She is incapable of processing thought. That's a scary reality, that these people vote and have positions of power because they can't process thought. But you see these people on the streets when someone does a man on the street interview and they're like, they can't recall things. They can't process the information. They cannot solve complex problems. For me, it's always weird to see these stories. And I remember the first time I heard about the internal monologue thing. I think it was a long time ago, 10 years ago or something. No, it was longer than 10 years, like 15 years ago, maybe 16 years ago. For me, it was weird. When I first heard this concept, let me ask you this. When you think to yourself, we're going to take this to its next logical step. There are many people who are like, wait, you don't think words to yourself throughout the day? Yeah, for me, there is no moment, as I mentioned earlier. When I'm getting on my bike, it is just information flow to the millionth degree. The words that I hear in my mind are communicated faster than my mouth can speak them, which is why I'm able to talk as fast as I can. And why I have, like, as a kid, I'm thinking all these things. I can't get the words out fast enough, so I eventually end up talking really, 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 really fast. So it goes one step beyond this. What if I were to ask you, when you're thinking words, how many sentences are you thinking? How many tracks do you have? It was surprising for me to learn that some people can only think one thing at a time. That was surprising for me when I first started learning of people thinking differently. This is a huge influence in my understanding of reality, in that as I was younger, and most people I think who are younger, this is a lack of wisdom. They believe that everyone experiences the same thing. They think everyone thinks the same thing they do. They think everyone perceives the same thing they do and everyone experiences the world in the same way. There are many people who are adults who still feel this way, and it's why they think that if you're voting for Trump, you're a liar. There's literally nothing Trump could have ever done because I know everything and you know what I know. Therefore, you're lying because if I thought what you thought, I'd be lying too. They project. At a certain point, I realized different experiences means different mental development and different capabilities. And then when I learned reading these books about inner monologue and the lack thereof, I went, whoa. And then through conversation, I realized it actually goes well beyond inner monologue. So here's what I'll try to explain in my brain. In my brain, while I'm talking, I actually have a visual track, an audio track, a linguistic track, and they're all going off at the same time, multiple tracks at the same time. It's the weirdest thing ever. While I'm talking right now, I was just visioning people playing a game of soccer for some reason. I don't know why. That's what it was. While I'm on Timcast IR reading a news story, I can go into autopilot and read things while I'm thinking about doing my laundry and planning the rest of my day. It's probably why I'm so good at pressing record and just talking for a long period of time. I've gotten asked before, like, so you do all the production for your morning show? I'm like, yeah, I do it. I'm like, so how long does it take? And I was like, you know, I work from this time to this time. And they're like, oh, okay. So like, what do you use to write your scripts? And I was like, I don't write any scripts. They're like, what? How do you just talk? And I'm like, I don't know. I just do. Stream of consciousness, I suppose, what people call it. But here's the other thing. While I am talking, I could be reading these paragraphs. In fact, I'll tell you this. every single time I have read a paragraph, this is how this show works. When I see this story and it says, let's jump down so I can actually read something. And it says, according to research, only 30 to 50% of people have inner monologues, which means up to 70% of people don't have a talkative brain. The thing to keep in mind, no pun intended, is that it can vary from person to person, says Ogle. And an inner voice could become more or less intense throughout your life, depending on your mental state. If you're super stressed, for instance, it'll ramp up. While I was reading that, I am planning already what I'm going to be saying next. Reading this is autopilot. I can read it while thinking of what I'm going to say next once the paragraph stops, and I'm thinking about plans for later in the day. It's wild. It's not really wild to me until I realize that many people can't do that. So here, I'll tell you what's going on in my brain as I'm reading this. I'm planning what I'm going to say next, why I'm saying it, and what I'm going to say. As I'm reading this, it's quite literally the easiest thing for me to do. I'm reading words, and I can say them. I can say them quickly. I'm also preparing what's going to be said after the paragraph is done being read. So while I'm reading, I am actually writing the script, essentially, for what is to be said next. That's what I'm doing. And at the same time, I am planning, we are going to be skating later today. Someone's coming to the skate park. And so I'm envisioning, in my mind, what do I see? I see me skateboarding on the mini ramp in the basement, and I'm thinking of various tricks I can do and how to do them. When I want to do a trick on a skateboard, I visualize doing it. In my mind, I see myself in slow motion, doing all of the moves and motions required. That's happening in my brain. I can see it as I'm reading the paragraph and as I am hearing what I will be saying next. So I don't know how many tracks there are, four maybe. How I write music, for instance, is I play a movie in my mind. So if you think about the song we released, Eyes of Advice, and you know the demon comes out and Ian's grasping towards the demon and all that stuff, that's how I wrote the song. Will of the People, same thing. In my mind, I imagine a story and a scenario and I see it happen and play out. While it's happening, I think about how to describe it. Then I think of a melody. In my mind, I see a music video. And that is how I end up writing music. This is the crazy thing. When I first learned this, to me, it was normal. There are people who say, you mean you don't think in words to yourself? And I thought, there are people who only think in words to themselves? I have nothing to say whether it's good, bad, or otherwise. I think some people are really good at lifting. Some people are really good at jumping. Some people are really good at thinking. And if you're really good at thinking, it's going to give you a lot of advantages. But I suppose I can put it this way. It's a fascinating subject. There are many people who can't think. Seriously. That woman, and I mean no disrespect, but she says she envisions nothing. She thinks nothing. She just comprehends what is being said. But the reality is, I don't think she does. I think the information is processed to a degree that it is stored as memory and can be recited to a certain degree. But the inability to question yourself in your own mind and challenge these thoughts would result in you saying the wrong thing. There's no logical path happening. The other thing I can add too is there's like a math track, essentially. Here's what I think. I think that your brain has all of these different areas that are good at these different things. I think IQ is like, what, 16 different areas of intelligence? I could be wrong. So in your mind, you have these capabilities, but how connected are they? I remember reading about people who had, there's this thing that connects your brain. I don't know what it's called. Let me look it up. Connects hemispheres of brain. It is the corpus callosum. Two hemispheres are connected by a thick band of nerve fibers called the corpus callosum. The brain halves are able to communicate with each other via this bridge. Fascinating. So are there two different conscious entities within you? That makes sense. I read stories about people who had the corpus callosum severed, where one side of the brain controls, you know, it's like the left side controls the right and the right side controls the left or something like this. And so if the corpus callosum is severed, you now have no communication between your left and right hand. And so the dominant hemisphere of your brain may get you to engage, will control your waking conscious movements, and the other side is shut out. I think House, MD, did an episode about this, where one hemisphere of the brain was angry that the other hemisphere was doing things that it thought was wrong, and so the hand would grab the other hand and stop it, and they couldn't control it, and they didn't know why it was happening. The reality is part of their brain didn't know why it was happening, but it couldn't communicate. And so I think the end result was Dr. House saying verbally, because the brain has been severed and because the hemispheres can't communicate, there's one hemisphere of your brain. Half of yourself has been locked away. So you need to verbally say what you're doing and why you're doing it and explain it and hope that's enough for the other half of you that's screaming trapped inside. How terrifying. Half of your conscious self. So anyway, I don't know. I thought it was an interesting to rant on, and I thought it was an interesting to bring up because I'm curious for all of you to comment. How many tracks are your mind? Let me pull something else up too. I think it's called anaphasia. Was that what it's called? The loss of ability to understand or express speech caused by brain damage. No, that's aphasia. So what am I thinking of? Okay, no, that's something else. Anaphasic? What is that? Oh, that has to do with, then I don't know what I'm thinking of. Let me see. Let's do this. Visualize an apple. I'm getting the word wrong. Think of an apple in your head meme. Here we go. Someone tweeted, "This is still blowing my mind. Close your eyes and imagine an apple. What do you see?" She says, "I'm a five." There's a ranking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And in 5, it's nothing. It's just empty. There are people who are like, close your eyes and imagine an apple. I don't see anything. There are people who see 4, which is the white outline, 3, which is like black and white, 2, which is very cartoonish, and 1, which is a visual picture of an apple. If that's 1, I'm well beyond that. Not only can I imagine an apple, I can see a guy. I'll top my head. Okay, RoboCop is juggling a bunch of apples while Oliver Anthony is singing Richmond North of Richmond. I can hear him singing it. And then he's grabbing an apple from RoboCop and he takes a big old bite. And now there's a big truck bringing apples. Not only do I see the apple, I can see the world around the apple. The apple is spinning. I can see every detail. I can see inside, outside. I'm not trying to brag about this. I know it sounds silly. I think it's just fascinating and it's important to break this down. As people argue that some people are NPCs and it's worrying, I do think it's worrying that there could be someone with zero logical capability. That's terrifying. But I also think it's important to expand beyond the concept of internal monologue. It goes well beyond internal monologue. There are a bunch of different ways your brain can process information, and not everybody has access or the capability to do all of them. In fact, I think it's extremely likely, substantially more people on this planet are way beyond the capabilities I have and are going to be shocked to find. They're going to be like, wait, you only can think in four tracks? You can't do this? You can't? I guess not. I can't do what I can't do. Some people who were born could never see. They don't know what colors are. How do you even describe what a color is? That's fascinating, right? How do you define color? There's a definition. The quality of light based on the reflective, you know, elements of a substance or something like this. And it's like, yeah, I guess. But that really doesn't describe the essence of what color is. And do we have words to describe it? It's fascinating, isn't it? I'll end with this. Why I believe in God. In some form or another, seeing that some people can't process information, and knowing that I can, I'm not saying all people, I'm saying there exist some people who can't comprehend in their minds vision, sounds, or words, it becomes very obvious. You and I are not the end-all be-all of conscious power in this world. There certainly will exist beings well beyond our capabilities. There may be a being, and I'm not even talking godly. There could be life or the possibility of life that would look at us and go, how strange these creatures are that they can't actually calculate the atomic structure of objects simply by observing them. And it's like, well, we kind of can. That's within our capabilities, but it's really hard. We had to build instruments to do it. And they're going to be like, no, I can pick something up and instantly just know all of its atoms. How many atoms are there? How many electrons? How many quarks? And for you, it's a struggle. You can barely do it. Took a long time to build machines to get there. We can intrinsically just do. And then they go, can you flurbogon the gabo state? And you'll go, huh? And they'll be like, you can't flurbogon? And you'll be like, I don't even know what that means. And they'll be like, wow, it is beyond your comprehension to even understand this concept. And we'd say yes. The likelihood that there exists another being with more capabilities than you is one. The likelihood that we exist as the epitome of conscious thought is an absurdity. Anyway, long philosophical scientific rant on inner monologues and NPCs. I hope you all enjoyed it. I hope it allowed you to self-reflect upon yourselves. And I don't know. Interesting. I'll leave it there. Next segment is coming up at 4 p.m. on this channel. Thanks for hanging out, and I'll see you all then.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Earlier this week, Mr. Bocus, our cat, who has been here at the castle and was friend to many, passed on. Many of you know this story, and the experience I had, it's not the first experience I've ever had with death, certainly not one of our mascots and little friends here at the castle, but I was there with Mr. Bocus as he laid in the grass and finally passed, and there was this moment that made me think. It was as though his spirit, soul, or energy, or whatever, had left his body before he actually died. And I know that science would likely tell me, what you were witnessing was the collapse of higher brain function as his body went into an emergency shutdown mode to protect its internal organs or something like this. But whatever that may be, I certainly do believe in a soul. I do believe in God. I don't know if cats have souls or go to heaven or anything like that. But I saw this article in the Daily Mail titled "The Truth About the Death Stare. Hospice nurse lifts the lid on phenomenon that signals a person is going to pass away." And reading this, that was really interesting. I'll give you the simple version. The story of an old man in the room as, you know, he's talking to loved ones and he's terminal. And he immediately looks to a portion of the room and begins smiling. And I believe they even mentioned at one point talking as if talking to someone. Some of these stories, she mentions that the individual, the old man, claims he was talking to a loved one or seeing Jesus. It seems like many people have different kinds of experiences. I'm sure the secular individuals of the world would like to simply argue it's science. When you're dying, your brain dumps DMT into your system. You begin hallucinating and it eases the process or something like that. I don't know. But I certainly do believe that there is something well beyond whatever it is we exist in today. And I think it's foolish to simply think that this is the end-all be-all of the universe, of conscious experience, and what we are. Perhaps when we die, we join the great beyond, the great significant energy of other. I don't know. Maybe all souls are but little tendrils of the same being experiencing the world, and when we die, we become part of the one once again. I don't know. Maybe we go to heaven. You're on a cloud with a bunch of people that you grew up with, and they're all there, and everyone's happy. Maybe. What I can tell you is this. Mr. Bocus was our cat. And we also had Roberto Jr. Roberto Jr. was the first to be born of the original batch of chickens from Chicken City. And so we knew when he was born that he had a bent toe. And when he was first trying to crow, when he was getting old enough, he would collapse. And so we knew there was kind of something wrong. And unfortunately, he did not live that long before suffering a heart attack. I think it was only just over a year old. But he did have kids. He suffered a heart attack and died. Seriously, roosters can have heart attacks, and it's really sad. I was not there when he died. I was there. I didn't witness it happen. I was there when, you know, shortly after, and we were all shocked by it. With Mr. Bocus, we knew that he was not going to be around much longer. December of 2022, he began passing out. He was still a healthy weight, but he would fall over. His kidneys weren't functioning properly. They were beginning to die. And the issue was they were underdeveloped, too small. And so his adult body had his kidneys working overtime to do the work required to sustain him. And so they actually told us to put him down in December of 2022. They said, why don't we just put him down now? And I was like, what, are you nuts? Like, he's fine. He's walking around. He's doing his thing. He just needs medicine or something. We tried everything. He couldn't get a kidney transplant. He also had a defective heart. As a street cat, he had some defects from development and likely malnourishment and other things like that. And so there's nothing more we can do. We tried stem cells, but his kidneys were just too small and he couldn't get a transplant because his heart was bad. So we knew it was going to happen. Monday night, we knew he was unwell. Monday morning, I knew he was unwell. And I believe it was obvious he entered total renal failure, as you could smell it on him. Just near instantly, his kidneys had shut down. And so Tuesday morning, we brought him outside. I laid him in the grass in the sun. He was unable to move. He had completely lost all ability to move. And this is the point of the story and what I'm reading about with this phenomenon is it reaffirms to me that there is something beyond all of this. I was sitting with Kara and we were watching Mr. Bocas slightly curled over and he was looking at the chickens and he was sniffing and he seemed really interested. We were happy to give him a view of the chickens one last time. He always wanted to go outside, but he was too weak. We brought him outside once and he collapsed and, you know, pissed himself. And we were like, he can't. It's like he's barely alive. He's struggling. But this was it. So we laid him in the grass. At some point, his body went straight. He no longer was looking out at the chickens. He looked up, his eyes blank. And that was it. He was still lightly breathing, but it was like whatever he was gone. They wanted us to put him down. They wanted us to bring him in a cold, sterile environment and inject him. And I was like, no way. We laid him in the grass and gave him a send off. We brought him, we dug a little hole. We buried him at Freedomistan and gave him a little funeral. Everyone laughed and remembered all the things that he did. And he's just a cat. I know, not a person. But seeing this story, and I should probably read into it a little bit, it just made me think about the experiences we have and signs that there is something else. There's a show called Dead Like Me that was on 20 years ago. And I think it was 20 years ago. It's about people who are basically grim reapers. They ferry souls to the other side. But you're supposed to take your soul from your body before you die. You don't experience death. And that's what it kind of felt like. I was watching Mr. Bocas lay there looking at the chickens. And then all of a sudden he went rigid. His eyes stopped focusing. And he was just gone. Non-responsive. Just he was still breathing. His heart was still beating. But he wasn't there anymore. Again, science would probably just be like, well, you know, when the higher brain function ceases, and I'm like, well, maybe that's what call it whatever you want. Whatever it is that makes us who we are was gone before he actually died. Crazy. In this story, a hospice nurse talks about the death stare. It's interesting. If you're not familiar with end-of-life phenomena, there's a few things that happen at the end of most people's lives. One of those things is called the death stare, which is when someone gets really fixated on a certain part of the room, and no matter what you do, you can snap your finger right in front of their face and they will not move their gaze. Sometimes they just stare. Sometimes they will talk to someone who you don't see. Sometimes they'll have a big smile on their face, like they're seeing something that's obviously making them very happy. That's called the death stare. Here's a question I have. Many would argue that we know. When you die, your brain releases large amounts of DMT. What is that? Dimethyltryptamine? Is that what DMT is? Let me make sure I get that. Let me get that right. Is it dimethyltryptamine? Hey, I got it right. How about that? I'm not. Everybody knows DMT because we've all listened to Joe Rogan, right? And because of this, because of the DMT that's released into your brain, you hallucinate right before you die. That's all it is. Nothing more, nothing less. So my question is this. What is the evolutionary advantage conferred to a person through this end-of-life tripping process? Why does it exist? Now, one might argue that for no reason at all, some things just happen. Evolution. So we adapt, we change over time. That some don't believe in it. Some believe it's micro, not macro. I certainly believe in evolution. It makes a lot of sense. The platypus is certainly an interesting creature, I will add. Maybe we are a product of creation, whatever. But certainly, evolution then would be limited by only the ages in which you can reproduce. That is to say, anything that happens after the age of which someone could reproduce would not be altered or conferred through, it wouldn't matter. There's no reason for it. Let me put it this way. If the average age of reproduction in an animal is 1 year, then everything that the animal goes through in that first year is what will be selected for. And everything after its ability to reproduce, let's say at 5 years, so it's between 1 year and 5 years. After 5 years, the animal no longer has the ability to reproduce. If something happens to it, it cannot be selected for or against. Perhaps there's an argument for it being possible, I guess, but it already reproduced. So let's say an animal can reproduce the ages of 1 to 5. I'm just a generic animal, a goat or something. I don't know. At the age of 7, it grows wings and flies off and disappears. There's no way to select for or against that because the reproduction has already occurred. So whatever happens after that point has already now existed in the younger generation. When I look at what's going on with like the DMT in the brain and all that stuff, My question then is, how do you select for that? What could possibly happen in a young person's life that would result at the end of their life, a DMT release in the brain? I have no idea. Maybe it's that DMT is simply there and this is vestigial or a byproduct, not meant to actually occur. Perhaps. But it seems strange just to say that's simply it. I don't know. I kind of feel like, you know, I don't know how true it is, but I just feel that the closer you are to nature, the more understanding of spirituality you have. And humans have separated themselves from this, desperately trying to explain everything away, without recognizing that there may be things that you cannot explain. You know, we have this argument. I have this argument. We certainly had this argument with Ian about God. And it seems like there are many people who do not understand the concept of extra dimensional or universal or planar existence. I suppose in the instance of God, you describe it as extra planar existence, meaning that beyond this universe we live in and its physical reality, beyond the multiple dimensions which may exist beyond our perception, beyond the multiverse, which may exist within this realm, you have our planar existence. Outside of all of that could be something. Because of that, because we live in this reality and because we are intelligent, or to the extent we're intelligent, we try to explain everything away within the confines of this reality without realizing it may be impossible. I'll give you an example you can understand based on earthly reality: video games. A character in a video game can never experience anything outside of it. And our science and technology exists outside of it, and it can never touch, smell, see, hear, or interact with it in any way. Perhaps we can make an AI robot body, and then a video game AI character could inhabit that body and then be like, wow, look at this. It's not the same. What I mean is, when it comes to someone dying and perceiving something that's not there, and maybe a person or otherwise, we might want to say, oh, but the brain is doing this, that, or otherwise. And it might just be like, that doesn't matter. Because there may be something beyond our planar existence, which we cannot perceive, that no instrument could touch. And our only view into it is watching a person behave in a way that seems strange. But of course, it interacts with the rules of this reality, and so we justify it in some way. Ah, DMT was released in the brain. Philosophy, I suppose. There are many people who want to just say everything is within the confines of this reality. God can't exist because how could... I love this question. Could God create a rock so heavy that he himself could not lift it? For if he cannot create it, he is certainly not all-powerful. And if he does create but then can't lift it afterwards, again, still not all-powerful. And my response to that is, can I program a video game in which my avatar could not move it, but I, as the game's programmer, could delete, create, or do otherwise? Yeah, it exists. Or as Homer Simpson would say, could God microwave a burrito so hot that he himself could not eat it? The answer is, of course. Yes, but it doesn't change the fact. God does not exist within the plane of existence that he created. Certainly he does to a certain degree. But then you take, I find it interesting when you look at Christianity. They argue, why would he need to send Jesus and why would he send his only son? Because he's outside of this realm of existence. To inhabit this existence, you would need an avatar. You would need a manifestation. Duh. I don't know. I thought the story was interesting. She talks about a man who kept giving the death stare all week. His wife didn't have the heart to tell him as he was dying that her sister had passed. His sister-in-law was dead. Finally, she came to him and said, I want you to know that, my sister has died. And he says, I know that already. She asked him how. He says, she told me. I've been talking to her all week. So I have to wonder about this stuff. I wonder if we as humans have separated ourselves so heavily from the spiritual, whether it's religious or otherwise. We become so insistent that we know, or perhaps because the fluoride has calcified our pineal glands, whatever. We now cannot perceive beyond the veil or recognize what's happening when it's happening in front of us. Or simply, maybe when we are getting closer and closer to death, the veil from this world to the next becomes thin and you're able to then see through it. I don't know. I'm inspired to talk about this simply because of the legacy of Mr. Bocas. That's about it. And then I saw this story and I thought it was interesting because he had the death stare. I was like, yeah. And maybe it's just he's brain dead. His heart and lungs are still going, but his brain is dead. I don't know. It felt like his soul left his body. The first thing I thought was something, someone, some force of the universe had taken Mr. Bocas out of his body before his body actually shut down. That's what it felt like. We can explain away everything we want. And I think this is why the interesting thing that so many secular individuals and atheists don't understand faith or spirituality. And I think for me, it comes from wisdom. Knowledge only takes you so far. Intelligence and wisdom, they're very different things. Wisdom is recognizing the limitations of our brain and what we think we know and what we can know. Wisdom is recognizing that things exist which we cannot perceive or ever truly understand. And that means we don't know what we don't know, which means certain things are possible. Many have faith in God without evidence. And I believe it is the young and the naive who would say, why, you know, it's ridiculous to have faith in something you can't prove. For me, I learned this lesson as a teenager. With wisdom comes the understanding that we can't know everything. The phrase, true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing. When I was younger, as a teenager, I was like, that's stupid. I know a lot of things. I know that this, that, or otherwise, these people think they're so smart. And then I got older, and truly became wise and went, oh, now I get it. If we were ever able truly to know, that would be the end of the pursuit of knowledge. With the wisdom of knowing that we don't know is what drives us to try and know. And true wisdom is in knowing that as a human being, we probably will never know everything. Maybe perhaps we'll create an AI, which will be some kind of weird demigod-like being, and it can just know more than we can. But even then, it will be limited. And so I guess the only thing for all of us to do is wait until that day comes. And maybe we'll still never know. Because when that day comes, when the farm is good and bought, you'll be there without a thought. And so that's it. I don't know. Rest in peace, Mr. Bocas. You know, he lived as long as we could help him live. Perhaps in the future, we will get a new Bocas. Thanks for hanging out. Next segment will be up at 8 p.m. over at youtube.com/timcastirl. We'll see you all then.